attain 100% literacy by second grade. Before we approach that subject, I want to give a couple of announcements. We'll have a site visit tonight in North St. Paul for District 622. We want to commend each of the senators for the three previous visits. I've had excellent feedback, and we look forward to the program tonight in North St. Paul. The focus there will be on technology. Today we will have a presentation from the Department of Education on the overview of how we are doing in reaching this goal. In fact, state statute 120B.12, and there's a pink copy distributed, that provides the legislature seeks to have Minnesota's children able to read no later than the end of second grade. And then it sets forth identification, and it is spelled out as to what should be done. Today, several years later, we're here to see how are we doing as a state. And as you know, if you can't read, you are at risk. And anything we can do to address that as early as reasonably possible is something that we will talk about in the context of the achievement gap, achieving our test standards requirements. But many of us have said it starts with reading, with literacy. So to start the presentation from the department, we have Beth Ani and Barbara Sullivan. We start with Beth and ask each of you to identify yourself for the record. And I believe there's some handouts that are being distributed now. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Beth Ani. I'm director of the Division of Academic Standards and High School Improvement. And I am substituting today for the reading specialist in our division. The department has one reading specialist, and her name is Bonnie Houck. And she is ill today, but I'm using some of her data and some recently released data from the assessment division to share with you. I'm going to take a few minutes to provide a very brief overview of reading achievement in Minnesota based on the latest data that we have from national and state sources. And if you would refer to the green handout, the slides that I'm going to discuss are on there. If we look at the national data first, provided by the National Assessment of Education Progress, NAEP data, the last that test was administered in reading was 2005. And our students take that test in both mathematics and reading. It's just a sample of our students in grades 4 and 8 who take this test. And if you'll turn to the third slide, look at the third slide on that sheet. Minnesota students, compared to the nation in terms of the NAEP reading assessment, look very good. You see at grade 4, Minnesota, which is shown in the darker colored bar, is achieving at the proficient level at a rate of 39% versus 25% nationwide. At grade 8, that doesn't change a whole lot, 38% for Minnesota. Eighth grade achievement versus 25% for eighth graders across the nation. So in that sense, we look very good in terms of our reading achievement. If we look at the separate grades, grades 4 and 8, another way to look at this is that relative to other states, only one state in the country scored higher than Minnesota on the NAEP reading assessment. And about 17 other states scored in the same range that we scored. In terms of grade 8, similar kinds of results. Again, one state in the country scored better than Minnesota 8th grade students, and 18 states scored in the same range as we did. So we see some similar kinds of data there. If we look at state tests, and there are two kinds, the MCA, Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment, that was given in the years here that you see, 2002 through 2005, and then the second test called the MCA-2, which was just administered for the first time last spring. If we look at MCA data over time, and this test is important because the test measures student achievement against our state standards. In terms of the MCA, you can see that the reading proficiency range from somewhere in the range of 70% about to about 79%. So somewhere in that range for all levels tested.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What grade levels is bar representing?
I think that graph is representing all grades.
All grades,
all grades tested. So it's a summative kind of report. So that test, we have some longitudinal data over several years' time. But now we no longer use that test. We use the MCA-2, which you see in the next graph. In 2006, the MCA-2 in reading, all students, was administered in the last spring. And that graph shows a breakdown by grade level of how our students did, broken down by ethnicity. So, and I think that graph is important because it tells the story of the achievement gap to some degree, that overall our students are doing well, but when we disaggregate the data by ethnicity or by other means, by poverty, by LEP, and so on, we see a different story emerge. We only had a few minutes to give our presentation today, so I haven't included lots of those other kinds of data, and I know I was asked to speak about what we're doing, too, so I
Senator
want to
save
time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the discrepancy between the NAEP test, where it says that while we may be better than the others in the nation, we're only 39% of the students are scoring at grade level. Am I reading that right?
Well, they're scoring at proficient level. And in many reading educators' opinion, what's called proficient in the NAEP exam is a rather rigorous level of reading. So one person might ask, is that the same as being literate? There are those who would say, yes, if you're proficient on the NAEP, you are literate. There are others who would say, well, literacy is much more than what is measured by the NAEP exam.
So, Mr. Chair,
it just is just a concern that is 39%, and then the MCA-2s is looking like a much more positive story for Minnesotans in general in terms of compared to our personal standards. And so I'm just raising the question about, are we really getting to where we need to be according to looking at that test? Thank you.
Sonny.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I think one thing to bear in mind is that what the NAEP and the MCA are measuring are different things.
I understand.
So it is really, I know that the most reading people believe that the NAEP proficiency level is quite high. So without getting into a lot more detail than that, the other thing to remember about NAEP is that when we have a majority, of course, of white students in our state, but when our students, our white students, are measured against other Caucasian students from other states across the country, we don't fare as well. So, again, just looking at one snapshot of the data like this only tells a piece of the story.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, your comments, I think, give me even more concern. Are NAEP standards, you say that's more rigorous in terms of literacy. So are you saying that our standards are less rigorous, our standards for proficiency are, in fact, lower than what the national standard is for what – I mean, this is reading. Reading is reading. What do we do differently with our standards? How would you characterize the difference in our standards, what we're – the expectations we hold for proficiency, and what the NAEP is setting to explain why we would have such a discrepancy?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I really should bring our reading specialist in and assessment folks to speak to that, but the basic reason that I can give is that they're measuring different things. I mean, reading is reading to some degree, but even the definition of what literacy is different, it varies from one state to the next and varies between the NAEP test and our own standards. So I think when we see the MCA two data, we'll have a better picture of how rigorous our standards are matching up to the NAEP assessments, because that test will be a true match with our standards. So in some ways, we need to wait until we have that data in.
Thank you.
Ms. Arney, I initially referred to the state statute 120B.12.
Yes.
Do we have information indicating the literacy for students by the end of second grade? And if not, what is the interpretation of what school districts are to be doing for identification, which is in subdivision 2?
Mr. Chair, I spoke extensively with our reading specialist about this, and we have no firm data in terms of standardized assessments that we can share with you regarding whether, you know, to what degree students are literate by the end of grade 2. Obviously, there are many problems with having a standardized assessment with second graders and trying to see if they really can read. That's an invalid type of assessment for them for many reasons. So we don't have that kind of data, but we do have a lot of anecdotal data from those who work with our schools. And
excuse
me,
it's invalid to assess whether a student can read by second grade?
Well, Mr. Chair, what I meant by that statement was a standardized measurement that you're using to test students' reading skills may give you just a piece of the picture. So it doesn't give you a truly valid, doesn't give you a comprehensive picture of their reading ability, as you would have, say, with an assessment administered by a teacher who's listening to that student read and can ask them questions right away about their feedback and can hear how fluently they read the passage and so on.
Is there a intervention strategy for students that are identified at that stage?
Yes, there are many different kinds of intervention strategies that are used. And to answer your first question, the anecdotal evidence indicates that school districts are implementing 120B.12 in a variety of ways. Some are taking it much more seriously than others. We suspect that there are some schools ignoring this.
We can visit that later. Thank you, Ms. Ani, and you'll stand by, and we'll go next to Ms. Sullivan from the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Barbara O'Sullivan. I supervise early learning services, and we administer the early childhood programs in school districts and Head Start. And what I'd like to start off with is we will be publishing the fourth year of our school readiness study. It's a developmental assessment of kindergartners at entrance. And what we do in that study is we have a representative sample of kindergartners who are assessed by the kindergarten teachers in the first 6 weeks of school. And the children are assessed in different developmental domains, looking at personal and social development, language and literacy, mathematical thinking, the arts, and physical development. And the children's performance is rated by the kindergarten teachers as either being not yet in process or proficient in demonstrating skills, knowledge, and behaviors across these developmental domains. And there's a total of 32 indicators. Consistently, in these 4 years of the study, the most not yet ratings have been in the areas of language and literacy, with approximately 12% of the kindergarten cohort, the sample of the kindergarten cohort rating is not yet in that area. And this is also consistent with national research in that the children who are rated as not yet are from families who have low maternal education level and low income levels. So I wanted to start out with that, and then if you want me to move into some of the examples and highlights of the programs we work with on how they're addressing this.
Just go to the highlights.
What I wanted to do is just briefly tell you about in Head Start, there's two literacy intervention models that are being used by some of the programs. The first one is from Serve Minnesota, and they use AmeriCorps models. And there's an emphasis on 5 specific literacy skills, looking at rhyming, picture naming, alliteration, letter sounds, and letter names. And this model involves an early childhood curriculum, a master coach, and then the AmeriCorps volunteers are trained as coaches that go in and work with the Head Start children on an individual basis around literacy. And this model, and part of it is that the children are assessed, and as they're assessed, that data is used by the teachers to plan strategies for intervention. And they will be coming out with results looking at the MCA grade 3 literacy reading scores as compared for these children that are going through this model. So it is a research-based model that they've been able to show these children are scoring higher than children who have not. Another model used by specifically Head Start in Ramsey, Washington, and Dakota County is called WordsWork. And it's a similar model. It really focuses a lot on professional development in training master teachers who then work with the other teachers in the classroom to look at specific strategies in the classroom around literacy goals and how these goals can be accomplished. It also looks at the types of materials in the classroom to make sure it's literacy rich and really developing leadership and program capacity to try to sustain all that the staff in the Head Start program so that they're there and can continue working. Both these programs have a family involvement component because we know with young children, you know, the first teacher, most important teacher is the parents. So there is that component as well. And both of these models look at outcomes, serve, as I said, on the MCAs, and WordsWork will be publishing their results. The first children that were involved in WordsWork will be now in the fifth grade, and they'll be looking at specifically the Stanford-Binet reading part of that for these children that went through this. And then I also want to mention there's five programs in Minnesota in the school districts that receive early reading first grants. These are different than the reading first grants that come through the department. These grants go directly from the U.S. Department of Education into the school districts, but there is an emphasis on all levels of development, but specifically around literacy. And finally, I just want to mention that the department does have early learning guidelines around language and literacy as well as the other developmental domains, and that we align these standards with the kindergarten academic standards so that early childhood teachers can see the foundation that they're building as children go into kindergarten.
Thank you. Ms. Arney.
Mr. Chair, in terms of options at the K-12 levels provided by our reading specialist, the top needs have been to provide help teachers with classroom assessments for struggling readers. So that's at grade K-1, 2, and 3 especially, but it pertains to all grade levels. So our specialist has spent a lot of time working with the Quality Teaching Network in Reading, which is a group that the department works with to train on the latest strategies, the research-based best practices in reading instruction. And these Quality Teaching Network members, all of whom are teachers and some are from higher education, schools can hire them to come in for a brief amount of time to work with their teachers so that they're better teachers of reading. So that's one option. Another has been the guided reading program. Many teachers have found this to be a very effective intervention strategy to use with their readers. The teachers use what's called explicit comprehension strategies with their students in a very small group setting. It's proven to be very effective with many kinds of students at the primary level. And finally, we provide lots of different kinds of workshops and technical assistance depending on the kinds of needs that districts think are unmet, that they really need someone else to go to for that help. So, and that's a whole variety of workshops. I have them here, but I don't think we have time to go through them.
Questions? On the question of how can Minnesota attain 100% literacy by second grade? Is it a financial resource question? It sounds like we're at 88 to 90% literacy, but for those 10% or whatever that figure might be, those students are at risk, and we're going to spend a lot of time talking about at-risk students, early childhood investment, mm-hmm. kindergarten, but anyone that can't read by the end of second grade is at risk. So how much in program dollar or reallocation, any suggestions on how we can reach 100% goal?
Mr. Chair, clearly one thing would be to make legislation 120B.12 have teeth. Clearly, there are some districts, some schools that aren't taking that seriously, because really if that were implemented with the intent that it was passed, that would be very helpful to schools. So that's one thing. Another is a focus on professional development for teachers so they really do know how to diagnose students' needs and then provide the appropriate kind of intervention. That takes a lot of professional development. And then third, I would look at factors that involve the home environment. If the child is growing up in a language-poor environment where there isn't a lot of oral language in the home or where the student's not being read to, if that student shows up at school with less than a 10,000-word vocabulary, we know they're going to be at great risk for not learning, not being ready to read. So it's a combination of applying the best practices in the school as well as having supporting good home environments.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned that the department has documented the research-based practices. Do you have a place where that is identified, a reference for schools, for teachers, for any lay people, as to what kinds of things have passed your past muster with you and other professionals that are effective in accomplishing the reading goals?
Ms. Sonny?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes. A good place to start is with the Department of Education's website, and if you go under academic standards and choose reading, some resources will pop up there. But with this legislation, there was a requirement that the department provide good intervention strategies, and that you'll find on the website. So that's where I would direct you as a good place to start. Or if a layperson wanted to see what are some good strategies, that's a great place to start.
So, and Mr. Chair, to follow up on that, I'm starting to feel like I'm sounding like a cracked record, but Senator Bonhoeff and I were both in the same meeting with a group of parents of dyslexic children in December, and that had really worked hard to find the kind of assists for their children, and we heard an outstanding presentation from the headmaster of Groves Academy, and it was the first time I've actually heard a presentation that got down to the nitty gritty of what, you know, the meaning of phonemic awareness and some of the actual roadblocks there are to children learning how to read that crossed socioeconomic, education level of parents, all of those kinds of lines. Many of these were well-educated parents. Their kids were having a real struggle. And it boiled down to the methods that they were finding that were working were definitely research-based and that had to do with the sounds and being able to recognize sounds and be able to attach them to the letters and the sounds at the beginning and ending of words. And it had marvelous results with kids that had been labeled in special ed and feeling that actually if we did more in this area of reading with these kinds of methods for many, we could prevent many from carrying the special ed label or needing intervention beyond that, and possibly even influence the behavioral aspect that kids may be acting out because they are not being able to perform, and that's a way to kind of divert attention from that. And a couple of things that there's a program coming up on Saturday that I'm going to try to go to with the Linda Mood Bell methods. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's two. They are two doctors it's a research-based methods in terms of working with these skills. And another term that came out was Orton-Gillingham.
Oh, yes.
And that apparently there is groups that are conducting workshops for teachers in helping them with that. Now, is any of that related to what you are doing? I'm trying to sort out what's, if there's things out there that we don't know about that are working, then maybe we should be trying to do a little bit more pushing in that direction. And as you were raising the issue too, it came to mind that, you know, we have scorecards. Maybe there's something on that scorecard that isn't exactly as fair for schools than if they're investing and gearing up their people to get the young people to read. Because I think most of us feel that if you don't have that, I've heard it said here at this table, you learn to read, you're learning to read up through, we say second here, but up through third grade, and beyond that, you're reading to learn. So if you haven't learned to read, you're not going to be able to read to learn, and you're going to fall behind, and we're feeding more into the pool of dysfunctionality through life, and we've got to stop that. And especially if there are some ways that, you know, we should not get everybody with their blinders on in little pockets. We need to open this up and hopefully, get people exposed to things that do work, and let's get on with it.
Ms. Honey?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I would agree with everything you said. And, we weren't asked to present strategies that have been particularly effective, but there's a long list of strategies. I would concur with you, and I know Bonnie Houck, and I'm sure Barbara would support me on this point, which is there are many research-based strategies that deal specifically with phonemic awareness and phonics and fluency, which are three of the things that tend to be focused on in the primary grades. Many, many strategies that some teachers are unaware of. And so we're really putting a lot of attention on trying to get that word out and focus on professional development with the strategies that really seem to make a difference. Another thing that they have noticed is that some reading difficulties do not show up by the end of grade two. A lot of the problems with phonemic awareness, phonics, and comprehension to some degree show up by then, but then other problems show up at a later stage often. So that kind of complicates the situation.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chair. This is such a wonderful topic because I think it leads to everything that we want to do in this committee. And you took these six words out of my, I guess, off my paper, Senator Olson, was we teach kids to learn to read and then read to learn. So if we really want higher standards, that we really need to make sure our youngest learners are reading. There's a couple pieces in here, though, when we talk about wanting to put more teeth into this. In subdivision 3, intervention methods may include but are not limited to requiring community education programs, attendance in summer school, intensified reading instruction that may require the student be removed from a regular classroom. Those kind of things to me would sound like they require resources. If we're going to have children attend summer school, if we're going to be looking at more intensified reading instruction, to me, we need to be able to also look at those areas as investments. This is an area of extreme interest to me, and I have some legislation being drafted that talks a lot about this. And Senator Wieger and I have talked a lot about wanting to make sure that, you know, literacy truly is, you know, a part of what we're going to be doing this year. So I guess that part of this is if we're going to put teeth into it, it's not penalties, it's incentives for school districts. And I think looking at programs, there are a number of programs, and I think we'll be hearing from them later today, that have a proven track record. And instead of doing more pilot programs, you know, let's do another pilot program on this. We have programs that do work in this state. And why we are not looking at the research-driven reading models that have a track record of working and not implementing them and investing in those programs, to me, would be a smart thing to do. So that's just more of a comment than a question to you, but I guess just to clarify, when we put teeth into things, I'd rather see incentives.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your comments, Senator Olson, and I had raised my hand to talk about the same meeting that you spoke of, the one that where we listened to these people speak about how they were intervening in these early children's life using these research-based reading programs. And I've since gotten follow-up letters from my constituents who have said that they've talked to teachers in their schools who don't seem to be aware of these research-based programs. And I know, Senator Saltzman, you were also talking about similar programs. But so as I read the statute, it looks to me like we do have language in there. It says that elementary teachers are able to implement comprehensive, scientifically based and balanced reading instruction programs, and that they're prepared to teach using the intervention methods or programs selected by the district. And so I'm wondering what we can do to make that connection. If we've identified these scientifically based programs are effective with these problems and it's in law that they must use them, how can we make that leap? And we know that teachers in great districts, you know, who are very successful aren't aware of these.
Sonny?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think there's a variety of options for answering that question, but two that I've heard today are puts teeth, maybe that's a bad thing, but some kind of requirement into the law so that this does happen, and that could be an incentive. That could be something else.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Bonoff.
I mean, but it's in the law, so I would say that there's something about our ability to just manage what is in the law rather than having to provide incentives or teeth. I question whether we ought to have to do that.
We'll ask the department to reflect on that. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate Senator Saltzman bringing out that sentence in the regarding intervention, and that intervention methods might include attendance in summer school, intensified reading instruction. There's a place there, but to me, the methods, sometimes we look at the add-on rather than to how we might change how we're doing things so that we're using our basic resources more effectively and not having to go beyond. And that's the part that I think when we're talking about some of these methods that are really tools for teachers to teach and be effective, the first time around, I hope that we don't lose sight of that, because we're going to run out of resources and time if we keep having to add on and go beyond. And I mean, that there'll always be that need, but I think that should not be our first resort. Our first resort should be, are we teaching as effectively as we possibly can with the initial resources we have?
Thank you, Senator Olson. And we'll go next to our panelists. And also included will be Ann Casey, and I believe there's Audrey Sucker, Christina Sheeran, Carrie Bowman, and they could approach. And also I'd like to welcome everyone here from Rochester. You made a big impact today at the Capitol. If you all want to raise your hand here today. Okay. So on behalf of the Senate, you're doing a great job here, and I know Senator Lynch, Senator Senjum, and others sharing that pride. We do have a visit to the district as well in a couple of weeks. So I believe Ann Casey asked to go first, and then we'll ask the presenters to share their comments, their suggestions. If there's handouts, please put them at the end of the table.
Thank you. Senator Wieger, and Senator Olson, I loved your comments. Thank you very much for the comments that you made. I think the
closer to the mic, please. Yes.
I'm here today because one of Senator Wieger's staff found a paper that I wrote when I was at the University of Minnesota a number of years ago on a policy. It's a policy paper on doing developing a Minnesota Reading Initiative and what we'd have to do across the state to actually improve and promote early literacy. And that was written in 2000, and so that's 7 years ago, and there's some things in there that we've actually accomplished since then that I can briefly report on, and the things that we still need to work on, and I think it directly ties to some of the questions you're asking the department and what the folks that are following me from Serve Minnesota are going to give you some great examples of. So very quickly, in that paper we talked about, in 2000 we didn't even have a reading licensure for teachers, and we have that now. So that's a great improvement. We have people who have to have certain qualifications to be reading specialists. In 2000, there was a big concerns about pre-service education for teachers in the area of literacy, and we certainly have made great improvements in that area. I would argue that we still need to continue on making improvements in that area. Also at that time, we talked a great deal about early intervention, and I think we need to continue to focus on early intervention, including the preschool years, all-day kindergarten, and then the primary years of K through third grade. And to that note, I'd like to just give what I've handed out to you is a model for implementing early literacy services for students. The model has a name. It's called Response to Intervention, or RTI for short. It's kind of a national initiative right now. There's a number of states that are kind of wrestling with response to intervention. And I'll just very briefly go through it, because I think what Serve Minnesota is doing and going to tell you about is how they're really focusing on at-risk students and providing supports. But in the little handout that I gave you, just the foundations are very simple and straightforward, that all students should have access to high-quality research-based reading intervention in general education, and I think that's what a number of your senators were talking about. And we do have pretty good ideas these days about what constitutes research-based reading interventions. But even in addition to that, that alone is not going to solve the gap that we have in Minnesota, and that there will always be some students, regardless of how fabulous our general ed reading program is, some students who are going to need additional support in order to increase their literacy skills and accelerate their progress and reduce gaps. We have one of the largest gaps in the country that is very concerning to me personally, and I know to many of you. And then finally, there's students who will always need probably ongoing intensive supports in literacy in order to make progress. And the bottom of that first page there, you see a little triangle, and that's a representation of this model, response to intervention. So we put, it's in a triangle form because if you can think of it as a pyramid, all the students are at the bottom of the pyramid. But in addition, then, a few or some students need more targeted supports. They're in the middle, and that's a tier two intervention that they might need. And then there's this very few number of students who are going to need that ongoing intervention. And so they're at the top of the pyramid, and they're represented by a smaller space. Some of the core principles that we really embrace in a response to intervention model is that we can effectively teach each and every student, if we use research-based strategies, if we have good professional development, and we focus on the students that are most at risk, and that we intervene early. If we use this multi-tier model, we use a problem-solving model. This is based on universal screening, so back on that triangle. All students would be universally screened, and we have very reliable and valid ways of doing that. Screening students, we can screen them 3 times a year and see who's at risk to not be proficient on our state tests. We have very good data on that, and I think Serve Minnesota is going to talk about that. And we haven't had a chance to talk to each other. Finally, we continue to collect frequent data, so we don't just sort of put kids in a tier and leave them there. We continue to monitor their progress, and hopefully the students in Tier 2 make good progress and ultimately then continue to be successful just with the strong Tier 1 support. So it's a simple model, but it's a very straightforward one. We would love to see the state adopt such a model. I speak for myself at this point, but there's a number of people who agree with me. And their MDE actually has funded a few grants to experiment with RTI in our state, and there are a number of other states also doing the same thing. So it's kind of a very timely topic, and there's much discussion at the federal level of writing response to intervention into the reauthorization of No Child Left Behind. That will remain to be seen, but I know there's lots of discussion about it. Thank you very much for letting me come today.
Thank you very much. Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, Ms.
Ann,
Casey,
yeah.
Ann, Dr. Casey, is there a place where we could get a more a fuller explanation of the model? Is
yes.
there a website? And could we have your phone number?
Yes. Why don't I give you my email and my phone number?
Sure.
It's acasey at mpls.k12.mn.us, and I have a whole host of websites I could send you. My phone number is 612-668-5404.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Casey, isn't this also a big piece of special education reform? It's my understanding that children, you know, traditionally have had to fall essentially 2 years behind before they can really receive special education services. And so in implementing RTI into special education legislation, then we're essentially saying it's not just a matter of evaluating them. We need to intervene with them. So my point in all this is to say that if we want to address special education, it's not just a matter of more money. It's what can we do to reform that. And I know you're nodding, and I'm – but in terms of more information, I have some people coming in to work on this and can advise all of you to join us to really put together, you know, a specific piece of legislation on this particular initiative.
Great.
So
that's
maybe
great.
You could respond more to the special education because you know more than
yes,
I specifically
it is.
About
She's
that.
She's absolutely right. It's written into the federal idea as now an alternative for states. I shouldn't say an alternative. States are can no longer require districts to identify students with learning disabilities by that discrepancy model where you measured their intelligence and their achievement, and there had to be a discrepancy between the two. And there's some other variables I'm leaving out, some part of the criteria, but that was a major part of the criteria. And now the law says that states cannot require districts to do that, and instead they could use a model such as this model, a response to intervention model. The other model, the old model, is referred to as the wait and fail model. Mm-hmm. And this is a model of prevention, trying to focus on giving. You said you met with some parents of children with dyslexia. Many parents, at least parents that I've spoken to who belong to the association, are very on board with this kind of model because they see that some of their children would never have been identified in the first place if they'd gotten the supports that they needed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Casey. Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Casey, thank you very much for this presentation. I'm wondering how this fits with a couple of other things we've been hearing. We get presentations, and there seems to always be a lot of discussion when you're talking about screening or testing or assessment or whatever language you want to use, that it's actually measuring growth and change. And one of the concerns we've had with a lot of testing that's already been required in the system is that it doesn't measure growth. It just takes a, you know, sort of a snapshot
right.
view of things. Can you speak to that and how this fits in with those concerns?
Well, okay, it's a dangerous question for me because my background is psychology, so I could go on forever. I'll make it quick. You know, there's different assessments for different purposes. So in a screening purpose, you want a quick snapshot of a child, so you don't need an assessment like the MCA that's very comprehensive. You need something that predicts the student's performance on our state tests. And we have very simple measures, reading measures. They're measures of fluency, but a fluency measure, fluency meaning how well you read and how quickly you can read in a certain period of time and with as few as errors as possible, actually predicts reading comprehension quite well. And so for a screening measure, a very simple and quick measure like that makes a lot of sense because it's not terribly time-consuming. It's not a diagnostic measure. It's not going to tell us. It just gives us a barometer. It tells us that this student, it's a red flag. I need to look closer. So for those kids who need a Tier 2 support, we do some additional assessment to see what kinds of errors they were making, what their strengths were, and then what we needed to focus that instruction on for them. So there's different assessments for different purposes.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Casey. And we'll go now to we have Christina Sharon, Audrey Suker, and Carrie Bowman.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Audrey Suker, and I serve as Executive Director of Serve Minnesota. We administer the AmeriCorps program for the state, and we are very grateful to be with you this afternoon and provide some testimony on a special literacy initiative we've been developing over the last 3-plus years, which we call the Minnesota Reading Corps. At its essence, what the Minnesota Reading Corps does is marry the people power of the AmeriCorps program with the science of how children learn to read. And we initiated this program in the fall of 2003 with 34 AmeriCorps members serving in Head Start classrooms across the state. But now in our fourth year, we have expanded the model to target children from age 3 to grade 3, and we currently have 150 AmeriCorps members serving in 77 Head Start and K-3 sites across the state of Minnesota. And because the results have been so compelling, Serve Minnesota requested $1 million increase to our state appropriation this each year of the next biennium so that we can double the size of the Reading Corps, so that we can reach over 15,000 children over the next 2 years. And we would match the state's annual $1 million appropriation with additional $500,000 from the private sector, and then this total would leverage $6 million in federal funds. So it's a very cost-effective approach to this issue. And we're delighted that the governor has included this request in his budget. And today what we want to do is let you hear from two of the literacy experts that have been working with us to ensure the integrity of the literacy model that is implemented by the Minnesota Reading Corps AmeriCorps members. So first you will hear from Dr. Christina Sharon, who is with the Evaluation and Research Division of the Minneapolis School District. Christina will describe the model and some research that the district has conducted on children entering kindergarten from Head Start Reading Corps classrooms. And after Christina, you will hear from Carrie Bowman. Carrie is a school psychologist with the St. Croix River Education District and the director of their Reading Center. I'll turn it over to Christina.
Great. We just got it in time. What I'd like to address is the model serves children age 3 up through grade 3. And the part of the program that I have dealt most with in my training and coaching is this early program. Most of the programs that have been involved, Head Start programs throughout the state, but just last year we've added some YW programs, which are preschool programs. And so we're trying to expand that preschool service to those children. Our logo is helping children learn to read one student at a time. And the program looks at, the AmeriCorps focuses on age 3 to grade 3. The pre-K program is part of the program that I've been coaching and training in. This is just sort of a research piece that sort of tells us when we look at scores, and we're hearing scores how at third grade or fourth grade the scores are exactly the same as what we see in eighth grade. That's why programs like this that really have an idea of where those children are and how they're progressing is so important, because if we're going to see the same thing down the road, that what a child does in third grade as far as their reading proficiency goes is going to be the same without assistance, without interventions in eighth grade, we want to make sure that we stop that process. And we estimate that the number of children who are typically identified as poor readers could be reduced up to 70%. Through early identification and prevention programs. And the SCRED Reading Program up in St. Croix River Educational District has really proven this or pointed this or had a lot of success in making this happen. What are our goals? We want to increase the literacy skills of children enrolled in Head Start preschool programs. We want to build instructional and assessment skills in those early members through training, coaching, and further educational opportunities. So many times in professional development, particularly in education, we get a one-stop training. So you go to a wonderful workshop, and then you go back, and you may implement what you learned, but all that knowledge is really at the knowledge level. And so what we provide, or what's unique about this program, is the additional assistance provided by coaches who go into those programs and help teachers then implement what they learned in that training. And it's not that we are only focusing in on literacy, and I want to make that very clear. We are focusing on literacy in a different way. We ask our teachers to wear a literacy lens, so that in all their educational opportunities or experiences in that day, they somehow incorporate literacy in a very meaningful and very playful way, because we know we can't drill and kill. These are preschoolers. So it has to be playful but also meaningful. We also want to increase the volunteer capabilities. We train AmeriCorps members to go into these classrooms, and then they bring in additional volunteers and train them to read a story to a child, to have a conversation, to make sure the child can hold a pencil and learn some of the basic skills for writing. Reading, writing, and talking or communication all to go together early on. And children develop those skills simultaneously. So what are the four key components? Research-based definitions of kindergarten literacy readiness. What do we want children to do when they go to kindergarten? What are the important skills? We heard Senator Olson talk about, and Senator Saltzman about, phonological awareness and letter identification or alphabetic principles. Those are the things that children will need to know once they get to kindergarten. Once they get to kindergarten, there's a whole group of other skills that they're going to want to take on. We want to make sure they have the foundation. Somebody was talking about 10,000 word vocabulary. Very important. One of the first things we focus on in our training and coaching. We want assessment tools that are reliable and accurate and that inform our instruction. That's a different way of looking at assessments. These are assessments that are quick snapshots that we can look at and say, is this child getting it? Is what I'm doing as a teacher making a difference? And if it's not, then we need to sit down as a team and decide we need to change our strategies here. We need to change our interventions. So the interventions are tied to what we do in the classroom. Some of the indicators that we use or assessments or screening tools we use come from the University of Minnesota and the University of Oregon. The late Dr. Mary McAvoy and Scott McConnell developed IGDIs, Individual Growth and Development Indicators. They're little assessments that look at picture vocabulary, rhyming, alliteration. The students that we train in the AmeriCorps collect the data. So they're involved with the data collection and then actually using that data with the teachers in the planning of instruction. And we have systematic observations of those classroom environments. We heard the speakers from the State Department talk about it's what's in the environment that's also important and can be used as a teaching tool. The AmeriCorps members collect the data and record it. It's coded and sent to SCRED, and we keep track of it, and we watch growth and progress. This is what we tell the AmeriCorps members to do every day. This is what they're trained on. We want teachers and AmeriCorps members, we call it the 3-3-3, talk, read, and write. Three conversations a day, conversation around your meal, conversation around a book, conversation during play. So that during the playtime, teachers are engaged with children, not standing on the side, sharing their favorite stories about American Idol. So that it's always a teachable moment. They're always doing that. Three opportunities to write. Writing is scribbling, drawing, making some letters and shapes. Three book readings a day. And we want them to develop language and literacy in meaningful ways and set the environment. Writing and reading materials in every center. These are our goals that we've set. They're based on targets that what we expect of children to do on the beginning kindergarten assessment in Minneapolis and in other schools too also. These are some outcomes. As you can see, the yellow bar represents fall, winter, spring, and the different areas that we look at as far as literacy goes. And you can see that there's a consistent pattern of going upwardness is what we like to refer to it, is that the children are gaining those skills and progressing in those really important literacy skills. This was from 03. This is 04 and 05. You can go, yeah. These are more results. I'm trying to hurry here because I want to share this matched sample study that the Minneapolis Public Schools did under the direction of Dr. David Heisted. We looked at these children as they came into kindergarten, and we assessed their skills using our beginning kindergarten assessment. And it was quasi-experimental in that we had three groups, but we didn't have a baseline score, so we didn't know where they started. But we matched these children one for one. We had a group of children who were poverty or high risk, not in Head Start, and a second group that were in Head Start but not receiving AmeriCorps support, and then the third group was the AmeriCorps supported group. We did this study for 2 years, and in the first year that we did the study, the last group, the red group, were the AmeriCorps and PICA Head Start. If you look at the first group, those were students who were high-risk poverty but did not receive PICA education or AmeriCorps member support. And then this is the second study that we did, the match sample. At the end of kindergarten, we test these children also, and we have a little reading passage. It's probably 10 words or more, and we ask the children to read it at the end of kindergarten, and 61% of the AmeriCorps PICA Head Start children could read 10 words or more at the end of kindergarten. That was significant. And then this is the second year, 2005. This is the breakup, the demographics. As you can see, we have a diverse population, high poverty, 92% of the students in poverty. And these were the results on the second match sample. As you can see, in phonemic awareness, alphabetic principle, and total literacy scores, the children that were in PICA Head Start that received the AmeriCorps support scored 52% of them were proficient or on track based on our benchmarks that we've set up and correlated with MCA scores at the end of third grade.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators, for giving us the time to share information about this Reading Core program earlier this afternoon. The question was raised, what are the programs that are actually working? And the data we have to share with you this afternoon answers that question in part by saying this is one example of a program that really is working for the benefit of students. Christina shared with you information about the early preschool portion of our total Reading Core. I want to tell you more about the K-3 portion of our total Reading Core program. We through the really kind of the beneficial pairing of the expertise at SCRED for instructional design, data collection, and analysis of student growth with the expertise through Serve Minnesota, harnessing the power of community volunteerism and making things happen through people, we've really been able to design this very practical program. In K-3, there are AmeriCorps members who are assigned to school buildings and classrooms that work full-time all year long. They are assigned to work with groups of students K-3. Each child they work with for at least 60 minutes per week. And during the time that they're meeting with those children, they are engaged in very specific, scientifically validated literacy intervention plans that that we know based on our science are effective literacy instructional programs. In addition to that 60 minutes a week of research-based instructional planning, they also collect data, one data point per week on the students in order to get feedback about how the students are progressing and also for our benefit in terms of looking at the outcomes analysis and the benefit of the program. The measures that we use are curriculum-based measures. You've heard many people mention that term this afternoon. They are quick and reliable, valid measures that are easy to understand and sensitive to growth. The specific measures that are used for the Reading Core program, K-3, are listed up on the slide and are general outcome measures for important skills at each grade level of participating child. A little bit of background about the curriculum-based measures that we have discussed. This scattergram shows a research study that we did with students involved in the St. Croix River Education District. Every dot on the screen is a child, and the child's dot is placed at the confluence of their score on the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment in third grade and their score on their oral reading fluency measure, which is the curriculum-based fluency measure. Given the general baguette shape that you see on the screen, we can tell that these two measures are highly correlated, meaning as one score increases, so does the other. These two measures are correlated at about the 0.74 level, which is quite a robust correlation for statisticians around. Based on this correlation, we are able to move forward and create cut scores. If we know that we want all students to reach 1420, which is the state-defined score of proficiency in third grade on the MCA, we ask the question, what score must a child reach on the oral reading fluency measure to predict that the 1420 score will happen? Through longitudinal research following the children and working out the statistics, we've designed this set of target scores that provide a way for us to measure whether students are on track to make that 1420 by the third grade MCA or not. We use these as screening tools for all children 3 times a year in order to identify those who may need additional support to be successful on our high stakes test. All children that participate in the AmeriCorps program are identified because they are scoring below these cut scores. To tell you about the outcomes of our program, I direct your attention to the growth rate per week column at the end of the table. If you consider, for example, third grade, a child who is at grade level or on target in the fall will earn a score of 70 on the oral reading fluency measure, and by spring they would earn a score of 107. Yielding a growth of about 37 points on the measure over the course of the year, or an average of about 1.03 words per week of growth. So that's one year's growth in 1 year's time. Looking at our results from last year, we've got our target growth rates listed on the bottom row. That is 1 year's growth in 1 year's time on our measures. And then in the middle row, we've got the average growth rate of children participating in the Reading Corps program last year. You can see that these children who all participated in Reading Corps because they were below grade level expectations when they started, not only met the requirement or the goal of 1 year's growth in 1 year's time, they exceeded it, meaning that they're catching up. They are closer to grade level standard at the end of the year than they were at the beginning of the year, certainly due to the wonderful and hard and expert work going on in the school buildings, but with the supplemental support of the Reading Corps program in addition. Another way to look at these data, we looked back to see what percentage of children who participated in the Reading Corps made more than 1 year's growth in 1 year's time. And this is the percentage. You can see we had almost 3/4 of our kindergarten students grow more than a year's growth in a year's time. About 2/3 of our third graders. This is considering these students were growing slower than their peers beforehand because that's how they got behind in the first place. It's quite a notable feat to not only catch them up to a growth rate that's equivalent to what our expectation is, but in fact to accelerate it. I think in our time of accountability and the notion of no child left behind, the shared goal that we would have all children reading proficiently by grade 3, we need programs like this that catch kids up, that take students who are behind and bring them back up to grade level expectations so that they can all be successful and have mastered reading skills so they may go on and accomplish even greater things through their secondary education. And that's really, this is why I'm so excited to be a part of the Minnesota Reading Corps program. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. We'll get the next presentation and open it up for questions. Yes.
This concludes our prepared remarks. I just do want to mention that we do have with us in the audience today 3 of the Reading Corps AmeriCorps members. When I was in conversation with one of your legislative colleagues, they really were probing with me about whether or not it was realistic to find such individuals willing to give a year or two of their lives in service to their community like this, because you know they would make more working at McDonald's. But in fact, it is very possible. So we have 3 individuals in the audience: Courtney Woodhull, Christy Fries, and Angela Lucas. All 3 of these happen to work in Minneapolis, in the 1 in pre-K and 2 in the K-3 system. Just want you to be aware of that.
Could they identify themselves? If they'd like to share a statement with the committee, we would invite that if they'd like.
I think they would love that.
And you're heroes, and we appreciate that. Welcome. And for the record, please state your name.
Courtney Woodhall, and I am serving at Bethune Community School, which is on the north side of Minneapolis.
I'm Angela Lucas, and I'm at the downtown YWCA, and I'm a pre-K site.
I'm Christy Fries. I am working with Eastside Neighborhood Services at Tuttle Community School and Mulberry Junction After School Program, and I'm K-3.
I'm K-3 as well. I'm sorry.
Okay. Like to share a couple of comments on your participation?
Sure. As they were talking about the results and the target growth rates, just this year I have a third grader who was identified as reading below target. He could read proficiently at a primary or kindergarten level. And in the past 3 months, we've worked 4 days a week for 20 minutes each time. And he's now reading at a third grade level at the fall target benchmark. Previous to this, he'd been with Sylvan Learning Centers. His parents had been struggling to, you know, keep the extra services along, but could not do that anymore when they found out about our after-school program and that AmeriCorps had a program there. They were very excited. They've been very involved in his learning. And just the results that this has made for him is unbelievable. I'm so proud of this kid and how hard he's worked.
Thank you.
I'm a second-year member, so I, in preparation for this afternoon, I put together the children that I have been tracking since the fall of 2005 up through this winter. And I have copies to pass around if you're interested. This test is the IGDE test. Christina mentioned it. It measures the key early literacy concepts that we're targeting so that they're prepared to enter kindergarten. You'll notice the classroom median and as well as the mean. And at each benchmark, it increased from last fall up to this winter. The percentage increase is listed down there below. Some of the numbers are high because some of the starting numbers in the fall of 2005 were zero. So they're kind of, it looks crazy, but the point is it works. These kids combined with the AmeriCorps member and volunteers that I have at my site, as well as the classroom curriculum and the support of the teachers, they're making great progress, and they're right on track, if not above the benchmarks, already for kindergarten. So, yeah.
Thank you.
One of the things that I've noticed so much as a first-year Reading Corps member, I was in a different AmeriCorps program last year. We have a new school. We're starting the program at our school. It had never been there before, so it's new to the teachers as well as the students. And the students will flag me down in the hallway that I'm not working with asking to come work because they've seen the progress that their classmates have made, and they want to be up at that level as well. And they will throw food at me in the lunchroom when I'm passing by to get my attention. Miss Courtney, can you come take me later? I want to come work on my reading with you. And to see students get that excited that they're going to throw food at you, it's definitely really great to see, just to see the excitement that they have for really wanting to succeed, because they do. They want to succeed. They want to make the people around them proud of them. And I've seen that with the students that I work with and the students who don't get to work with me because they're already reading above level. So it's just been such a positive experience for me and for all the children that I work with.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Olsen.
Well, thank you for your service. Second year AmeriCorps, that's awesome. But I suspect this has changed your lives, too. Are you guys possibly going to go into education as a field now, or what are you thinking of your future?
Well, I actually am a certified teacher. I graduated 2 years ago with a degree in education from a school out in Ohio, and I came back here not exactly sure what I wanted to do. I love teaching. I knew that I wanted to do some sort of teaching, and this was just a way to extend it and learn a little bit more about teaching elementary education. I'm certified for social studies secondary, so this is just a new experience to continue my education. about learning and teaching others.
And for the tape, if you can restate your name.
Oh, Courtney Woodhall.
Okay, thanks.
Angela Lucas. Senator Olson, yes, I would aspire to be a school psychologist, and I have applied for master's programs here in the state and throughout the Midwest. So,
Christy Fries, Senator Olson, I also am a second-year member. I started with AmeriCorps because my husband has a three-year research postdoc at the U, and I have had experience teaching ESL and have a professional certificate teaching ESL. Depending on where we end up, he's currently looking for faculty positions. I hope to go to grad school to teach ESL.
Thank you. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for your service and being here today. And obviously, you're very enthusiastic about the job that you've been able to do. And again, I would point out, as had someone mentioned, as you're coming up here for very reduced wages. As the business of running the state and dealing with getting kids to read, you know, this to me seems like something that we must invest in. Everyone knows how valuable early literacy is in all the costs we put into fourth grade and on up, trying to get people caught up in terms of their literacy. If we were a business and we looked at 958% improvement in one factor of, you know, our delivery system or whatever it is that we're trying to do, or even at the very your smallest number here is 137%. Now, the one next to it, is that 1,259%?
Right. And I think that's what that was my disclaimer. Because it started at 1 and went to 9, that's...
Okay.
Yeah.
And yet, 137% improvement. You know, if we were a business, we would be all over this. And, you know, it strikes me that we know we have this broad achievement gap. And we have... a group of young people, primarily, I think, is what AmeriCorps deals with, that are willing to work. Wouldn't it be great if we had AmeriCorps in every single school district, being able to deliver services to kids? And, you know, how do we create a core of people across the state of Minnesota who'd be willing to do that? Well, again, on the other end, as business people, we have a lot of folks who are struggling with the high cost of tuition in colleges. Maybe we need to look at tuition reimbursement for a couple years of service in the AmeriCorps program as a way to provide community service, state service, get a nominal salary, and do tremendous benefit to the public good through our educational system. So it's just an idea, but thank you so much for the work that you do.
Perhaps a piece of legislation as well.
That might be a good idea.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes, and on that point, Mr. Chair, I believe the AmeriCorps program does provide a tuition credit. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's part of the AmeriCorps program already, is that by serving, you get a credit towards your higher education. But that's a great idea. Senator Olson and I spent Martin Luther King Day up in Rush City visiting SCRED and visiting this program and seeing it firsthand, and visited with an AmeriCorps member. You are just exceptional, committed young people. You give us hope for the future. But the one thing I think, too, that we met last Tuesday night and talked about testing and assessment, and there was a sense of another test, another assessment, that when you look at Dr. Casey's last slide about they use frequent performance-based assessment, don't gulp and say, oh, no, another assessment, because the reading assessments are about a minute, and the children actually read, as opposed to taking a written test to test reading ability. It's a very simple test, and the kids, as I understand, look forward to it because they chart their progress. They get immediate results, which is one thing we heard about. So there's so many pieces of this, but just having you here today, I think it's very helpful to see the young people who are on the front line of this program. You are not replacing teachers. You are going above and beyond. And the other piece is also, as we were up in Rush City, and Ms. Bowman was there as well, we were part of a monthly assessment with the coaching team, and seeing how that these assessments are used to immediately identify, do we need to intervene again? Do we need to do something different with these kids, as opposed to waiting another 3 months or twice a year? So congratulations to you. Keep up the great work. You truly inspire us. Thank you.
And on behalf of the committee, we share those. Thank you, Senator Saltzman. Further questions of the witnesses at the table? Okay, and any additional questions of previous witnesses? And then I'm going to see in the remaining minutes if there's anyone in the audience that would like to address this topic, as we will have a future hearing on some specific legislation as well. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for Ms. Suker and a part of your team. I don't know who would be answering it. In our earlier presentation, we heard about the three tiers, the students that need core instruction, students that need targeted instruction for a while, and students that need intensive instruction. Are there plans along the future to continue to support children who get your services at this early age?
I can take that, Senator and Mr. Chair.
Your name for the tape, please.
Carrie Bowman. Thank you. This program, the Reading Corps program, may be seen within the three-tier model as perhaps a tier two intervention. So you have core instruction that's delivered to all children. Schools would have the goal of reaching at least 80% of their children meeting grade level proficiency given only core instruction. We predict that an additional 10 to 15%, closer to 15 probably, percent of children will be successful and reach grade level proficiency given core instruction plus some additional support, something like the Reading Core model that we've described. This program is designed to be flexible, meaning that as students are identified as being behind grade level expectation, they can join the program. And then because we collect data on these students every single week, we know when they are ready to go back to core instruction. And so we're not giving less and not giving more than is needed for a particular student.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to address the committee on the topic of literacy? Okay. Members, as I indicated, we will be talking more about this, obviously, and as I said, as we address the achievement gap, I believe early identification and intervention is absolutely essential, and we had some very good recommendations that came here today, looking at the statute as well as programs, and perhaps some of the recommendations will be a surge in resources as well, and that'll be a part of discussions over the next few weeks as we address these subjects. In terms of the committee calendar, I know there's a number of meetings and site visits. And if you're able to be at North St. Paul this evening, that will start at 6 o'clock. There will be sandwiches prior to the meeting. And we have some overnight visits that are being scheduled as well, though we won't be scheduling too many more just in recognition of your very busy schedules. But I am very pleased. I acknowledged everyone that has done this so far. You've done a great job, and we'll continue to do that. For hearing bills, the question has come up, when are we going to start hearing bills? Well, we did the resolutions on No Child Left Behind and special ed. Those probably will percolate to the floor within 2 to 3 weeks. But I would expect that bills will be heard in another few weeks or so as we see more proposals come out and a better indication from members after listening to a lot of different groups. And then we'll cluster different themes and we'll have meetings to discuss that. So the bill schedule would be in mid to late February, and then we'll pursue that in earnest. If there's any particular thing, though, that you'd like to talk about for topics on background or further questions about the direction of committee, just let us know, open door policy, and we will hear all legislation that is proposed, just to remind you of that as well. Any questions at this point? If not, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll reconvene in North St. Paul.
We're going to be seeing more of that.
Yeah, this should be in the folder. I looked. I went off.